This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers.
Okay.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us today. And this big week for Penn State football as the Nittany Lions get ready to take on U.S. This half hour of the show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com, auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They do a great job of making sure that you are fully insured while saving you money. So important. Always looking forward to saving you money. And customer service means everything to them. At Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Always great to be joined by the brilliant and insightful Mark Wogenrich, whom I have such great respect for. My friend, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us.
As always, appreciate being here. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Mark, Saturday, I referred to it on the broadcast at the end with Jack, as I felt was like it was a workmanlike performance. How would you describe it?
Good word. I don't think it was. A lot of these times when I'm writing, maybe I'll try to think of like scores in terms of functionality. Like in my mind, I call them functional scores. To me, this was the functional score of 27-3. That was a late drive that UCLA had scored in the last minute. Largely against second-team defense. It matters on the board, but if you're looking at just good on good, I felt like 27-3 was probably a fairly representative score of, you know, a result of what happened that day. And maybe it didn't feel as though that score was, you know, represented that kind of dominance. And they didn't have it to an extent, but there was one. It was just another one of those games. It didn't feel like it was in doubt. I didn't feel like in any of these five games so far, close as they may be, to the point where, you know, against Bowling Green, they still have to recover an onside kick. But the result didn't appear in doubt. That it was just a degree of the result. And part of me thinks that that's just what Penn State kind of is facing this season. That it's just they're kind of being graded on degrees.
But, I mean, let's face it, because of the playoff, that's probably how they're, you know, yeah, how everybody's being evaluated at this point. Because one thing we don't know is, we don't know what the committee thinks because they haven't done this before.
Right, exactly. And it goes to an interesting point that James Franklin brought up. I found it interesting, he mentioned it after Saturday's game, and then mentioned it again today, that Penn State is the only team over the last 4 years. They were the only team over the last 4 years to start a season 4-0, and now they're the only team over the last 4 years to start a season 5-0. And that, there's a lot of subtext to that, and you get into like scheduling and everything like that. But that one, that means that for 4 years now, they're putting themselves in position. That every year they're getting themselves into position to be competitive. This season, they don't have to be, it's strange to call it as competitive, but they have a wider berth this season that, as you said, you know, with 12 teams and with the playoff committee that you really just haven't any idea which what they're thinking as of now, and you won't for still a couple of weeks, it's important to put yourself in a 5-0 position and to be there, but I don't think you have to be, you just don't have to be superhuman as maybe you did in past years, and that style meant as much. It certainly means something, but it doesn't, not going to mean as much. We don't know what they were thinking. You know, I mean, the best example, we don't know what they're thinking of Alabama right now.
Right.
leading Georgia 28-0, hanging on, and then losing at Vanderbilt. We have no idea what their perception of Alabama is. And probably a good thing that we really don't know and won't know for a couple of weeks until these perceptions gather more data.
No question. And I think when you look at Saturday, Vanderbilt beats Alabama. Alabama never led, first time in 5 years. Washington beat Michigan. Minnesota beat USC. Arkansas beat Tennessee. It's hard to win.
Yeah.
You got games like that, it's hard to win.
And it's even harder. It's even harder to win now, at least early. It's showing. It's harder to win when you have to go somewhere and cross a couple of time zones, whether the weather of travel affects you or not. At least early in some of these games, it has mattered. I mean, I think I have right now, it's like the team that's done the traveling in these Big Ten games, it's either crossed a couple of time zones or in either direction. I think they're like, 1-9, 1-8 or 1-9, something like that. The only team that's won crossing a couple of time zones is Indiana at UCLA.
Right.
So there is something there that one, it's just hard to win, and two, it's hard to win when you're playing, when you've got to divert, when you've got to adjust your schedule so much and make a lot, make scheduling concessions. So that to me is one of the unique factors in play with Penn State going to USC. That we think in terms of the only time we travel like that is we think in terms of that being a bowl game. And there's a lot more built into it. And now it's, how do they handle the fact that they're only going for 3 days instead of, 5 or 6?
Through the opening 5 games, is there any area that's been a little better than you thought it might be? And is there an area where they're not quite as good as you thought they might be?
I probably would go with conventional wisdom. Everybody, that they're better at wide receiver than I thought they would be. I thought there would be more of a hierarchy with Trey Wallace as being a defined absolute number one, and then complementary receivers around him. And that may still turn out to be the case over the course of 12 games and beyond. But the fact that you've got 4 players, 3 receivers and Tyler Warren with 100-yard receiving games, and the fact that that Liam Clifford can have like the third down production that he's had this year, and specifically the third down production he had against UCLA. I see them being able at that position with those 4 guys. It just seems like they got a nice 4-player rotation there with Wallace, Liam Clifford, Julian Fleming, and Omari Evans. That at some point, and you don't know when, you don't necessarily know when it's coming, at some point one of those guys can kind of go off and have a big game. That's been a real factor. That's been a real positive for me. And special teams, it's part of it is also a circumstance with having to play, Caden Saunders for a few weeks in a limited status as punt return. So he kind of gave up that element in order to catch the pass or in order to catch punts and just make sure you have possession. But there have just been a little bit of shakiness on special teams. Like Riley Thompson didn't have his best game punting the ball. Gabe Nwosu's kicked a couple out of bounds. And then the changes at kicker. I just think I always say, you don't notice special teams until you notice them. You don't notice kickers until you notice them. Those are the grace notes that will show up in bigger games.
You mentioned the receivers. What I found interesting is Penn State has had 4 100-yard receiving games from 4 different players.
Right, exactly. That's what I was trying to get at. More words than you did. That's been very. Like I expected it from Tyler Warren. It's hard. Sometimes it's just hard for tight ends to get 100-yard receiving games because you don't expect them with as much as the yards that could catch as a receiver, and you're not going to throw the 50-yarder to those guys. But he's just so effective and such a weapon in so many ways. But you don't necessarily expect, unless it's late receiving yards, in, you know, third quarter, you know, late third quarter or fourth quarter, when you're kind of, when you might be piling up yardage, or if you're giving chase, and they haven't had to do that yet. But you don't expect that many receivers to have like that kind of game unless you're throwing 45 times a game. That's the other thing, that Drew's just not, in this offense, he hasn't been a 45 pass guy a game. I mean, he's averaging in the 20s. I don't have the number in front of me, but he's just not throwing a ton of passes. So to have three different guys with 100-yard games, I think speaks to the explosivity, one, of their passing offense, and two, like I said, the fact that each of those guys brings just something a little bit unique that in a certain situation can be explosive at just the right time.
Which then brings us to the defense. And when I look at, you want to be good up the middle. Right? And you look at Zane Durant Thomas, you look at Kobe King, you look at Jalen Reed. Quarterbacks you and I both know, Mark, and all the quarterbacks you and I have talked to over the years, they don't like pressure in their face.
Right.
What has Durant meant in that regard? And then what's been the domino effect of Durant on what he's doing to help the defensive ends?
I remember talking to Zane like that about last year, and him just him saying that his size, I mean, he's gotten bigger, but initially he wasn't that big a guy, but he never thought that that was an issue because he's explosive. And he's almost got like a defensive end kind of step coming out of a three-point stance. And he's real. I think he's really shown that this year. And just to have him to be able to consistently get through and at least get a hand up, get an arm up, make a quarterback move, get him out, or at least, force them to be rolling quarterbacks so then he's only using half the field. When you do that, and then you're lining Abdul Carter up behind him situationally, which just adds another element to that up the middle, that up the middle scene that they've got going on. Then with Kobe, I think Kobe King's having a terrific year so far. He's been very good, very sure. And Jalen, even without KJ Winston, Reed Wheatley, and still had those three guys, Reed Wheatley and Winston back there, you'd have an all-star class of the baseball, pitcher, shortstop, center fielder. It would be a masterclass with that group. And but even without Winston, they've still been able to get Jalen Reed in some of those blitz packages going. He had a big one at the goal line against UCLA. And I've just been really impressed, specifically with those two guys, with King and Durant, as far as how they can then manifest plays for Tony Rojas and Deny Dennis Sutton. And like I said, Reed being able to come off and blitz, stuff like that. And the corners will feed off that too, that they can jump around. I think Zane Durant has been probably about as core player as they've had defensively so far, and be able to have ripple effects that just, improves conditions for everybody else.
I'm going to guess that when they put all this together and USC and UCLA said, hey, is there an avenue for us to get in? And Fox then said, we'll make a call, and found out it was a possibility. And then a year later, Oregon and Washington got it. Something tells me this is what the Big Ten had in mind Saturday, a doubleheader of Penn State, USC, followed by Ohio State, Oregon. I think, Mark, this is probably what they were hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, that's the centrifuge of that. Absolutely. This is the centrifuge of that, of the whole expansion. And I think one of the really interesting ripple effects of that expansion then comes into play with a team like Indiana. Because,
yes,
as you said, the networks, the three meteorite partners want Penn State, USC. They want Oregon, Ohio State. They want Michigan, USC. They want Washington, Ohio State. They want the brand game. Are they okay then with having, again, not disrespecting Indiana, but they okay with having a team like Indiana or Rutgers play the noon Big Ten Network game or the FS1 game, and maybe won't place them into higher profile matchups? some of the teams that Rutgers doesn't play, some of the teams Indiana doesn't play or hasn't played yet. It's going to help those teams too, really, because, I mean, Indiana's 6-0, and their schedule's going to get a little bit, their schedule's going to toughen, but they're not getting certain teams. Rutgers is not getting certain teams. I think Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan are off Rutgers' schedule, if I'm correct. I don't have it in front of me. But I'm wondering how they're going to have to reevaluate scheduling in a couple of years. If that brings into play, you know, like you know, like I said, like in Indiana, going 10-2 and getting into the Big Ten title game, perhaps. I don't know if that's going to be feasible, but it's that to me is going to be an interesting byproduct of having the monster games as well in your prime windows.
Exactly. All right. What's your thought on this game this week? USC's coming off the tough loss to Minnesota. Do I think the replay guys in the end got it right? Yes, but their methodology was awful. You know, if you could tell me where the ball is.
Please.
You know, I mean, that's an entirely different subject, which maybe I'll touch on in a moment. But what's just your thought on USC and what they bring to the table for Lincoln Riley?
I was driving back from Penn State, so I was listening to that game, and I had the Minnesota radio crew on, and they were bamboozled. One of the decision, they sounded a little bit perplexed by PJ Fleck's decision to go for it, but two, they were, as you were saying, they were surprised at the methodology and their view of that play. Just they seemed to be absolutely certain that he was in even before the review. Mm-hmm. So if you're Lincoln Riley watching that and you feel like you're that close to getting it, kind of escaping, and then you get the interception in the end zone, then you feel like you're that close to escaping your own cue, how does that reframe and reset where you are? And coming back home, you know, sometimes that kind of thing is good. That kind of reset, yeah. You know, that kind of team reset can make them edgy. And Penn State walks into something like that, you know, a defense that gave up two late touchdowns, and now they have, you know, they have some soul searching to do on that angle this, you know, this week. And how do they respond to that? I think they're gonna, you know, that's a point scoring offense too, but with Penn State, which, you know, if they can get some of the pressure and the coverage, you know, I feel like the matchup is, I feel like there's a lot in going in Penn State's direction regarding the matchup. Now, all the other forces that are coming into it, like number of possessions and you know, just having to play out there and getting out there, you know, just being ready for that kind of, you know, regular season game as opposed to a bowl game. I think that all definitely factors into it. But I do, you know, initially I do kind of like the matchup as a lean, you know, leaning in Penn State's direction. It's offense, especially offense versus defense.
I want to ask you about the replay reviews for a moment. Virginia Tech Miami ends. It's called a touchdown. Then on review, they reverse it. Okay. Then I watch Minnesota USC. They mark him short of the goal line. They reverse it. I watched the quarterback for Cal scramble out. The Miami kid, and he's not trying to hurt him, but he does launch himself and hits him square in the helmet with his helmet. In each case, I thought you needed indisputable video evidence to overturn a call on the field. Now, do I think they got the Miami and the Minnesota calls in the end correct? Yes, but I can't see it. Okay, I'm watching them like, I can't see it. And the Miami thing's the almost obvious targeting thing in the world. Now, like, what am I missing? Am I missing something, Mark?
No, and I mean, I can extend that to baseball. Being a Yankees fan, again, I didn't see the game, but the Jazz Chisholm steal of second base that he ended up scoring, that was eventually the winning run, and it sure looked like he didn't get there. It did look like that there was a sliver of air between him and the bag. Right. So I'm ready to, you know, I'll acknowledge that one too as a New York Yankees fan. I don't know whether they're feeling like replay has to be some sort of court decision. Right. That if they're getting to the, they get to the indisputable part that there's some sort of appeal that's going to happen, that if they don't, that if they're wrong, then an appellate court comes into play. So that's where I think maybe some of these things are hedging. Potentially that way. I'm not, you know, I can't speak to the mind of a replay official.
Of course,
but
yeah.
It almost seems to me like that they're a judge ruling with an appellate court in mind when none is there. And ultimately that might, you know, that might impact the way they're going with the indisputable evidence concept that you're talking about.
Yeah, because I couldn't find it on any of those, but that's...
Right.
Like, okay. Mark, always, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for the time you gave us today and the great insight.
Yeah, outstanding. Appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
Mark Wogenrich, always great to talk with him. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Great to have you with us today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, stock up for the big weekend now. Whether you're watching baseball or football or college football. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar, lay by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beverage supermarket. Penn State USC Saturday. We get going at 2 Eastern time. Kickoff 3:30 on Eagle 107. Our high school roundtable is being moved to Wednesday. Just so you know. Because we are traveling Thursday. And James explained it today. It's pretty simple. Like Maryland, for example, is very close to their primary airport they fly out of is BWI. Rutgers, the primary airport they fly out of is Newark. And they can take any size plane that they want. But the problem for Penn State is you can't take any size plane you want out of here. And going out, because you're going against the wind, is about a 5:45 flight out. It's about 4.5 to 4:40 on the way back. It's a little different. So they can come back in here. It's the getting out part. They have a longer runway here. It used to be you couldn't fly out of here anyway. Boy, the number of times in my career in the 80s and 90s where I went down with them to, you know, to Harrisburg and fly out. And that's hard. I'll tell you what's hard about it is not the going down to Harrisburg part. It's the part when you land on the way back. You're like, oh, got another hour and a half to go. I'm like, really? That part's hard. You're like, oh, really? Oh. So they'll go out there that way, and I think they're flying back into here on early Sunday morning, late Saturday night. But they're going to practice, you know, they'll practice on Thursday morning, do the usual Thursday practice on Thursday morning, and then they'll do their Fast Friday practice at SoFi Stadium, which will be kind of cool. So. And as for USC, good quarterback. I like Miller Moss. I think he's a good quarterback. I really do. You watch him play. I think he climbs the pocket well. I think he makes, for the most part, good decisions. I mean, you know, no quarterback in college is going to make great decisions all the time. But makes really good decisions, I think. The running back, Woody Marks, had a career-high 134 on Saturday night. I was impressed. I thought he really ran the ball well in that game. Really ran it well. They also can use him in the passing game, too. They've had a couple of tight ends have been banged up, but the wide receiver group, man, that is one impressive wide receiver group. Lane, Hudson, Branch, Deuce Robinson. Yeah. They're really impressive. Their offensive line is good, but you know what struck me? Minnesota. Now, I will start with this. Joyner from Minnesota, I think, is a really good defensive end. So let's understand here. That's a good player that they're going against. But I thought the two tackles for USC, I thought, really struggled against Minnesota. And that's why Moss had to keep stepping up on the pocket, keep stepping up, because they were getting pressure off the edges. Defensively, they played pretty well, especially considering Eric Gentry didn't play in the game, and we do not know what Gentry's status is for this week's game. Evidently, he suffered some sort of neck injury against Wisconsin in the fourth quarter, so they had to take him off the field on a cart. Now, he wasn't laying on the cart. He was sitting in the passenger seat of the cart. But he did not play, and I thought they played pretty well without him the other day, but he's a really good player. Leads them in tackles for losses, leads them in sacks, so forth. But they played better defensively this year than they have the last couple of years. And I think their kicking game is really good. Lance is a good field goal kicker. Plucky is a really good punter. Branch can be a dynamic returner. Under the category of, quote, so far so good, you know, for teams that have faced them. Branch is dynamic, and so far for teams that have faced him, they've done a good job of making sure he hasn't been a difference maker in the return game. That doesn't mean he can't bust out at any second with the right situation. Because I think he's that good. So, we'll see. When they came into the Big Ten, this is one of the matchups you were looking for anyway. When USC came into the Big Ten, this is one of the matchups you thought about right away. Penn State has not been there since 1991. very interesting. I mean, any place that hosted Evel Knievel going over 50 crushed cars in the field has to be quite the experience. I'll say that, I mean, I'm going to guess you haven't been there.
No.
I'll say this. It's all about perception and how it's built. But man, that place looks massive. Like, I remember going in there the first time going, man, this place is massive. And it wasn't as if it was, like I'd never been in bigger stadiums before. I had. And there's stadiums that have more seats. It's just the way it's built. Like, wow, this is a room.
It's like,
hey.
Because Beaver Stadium technically seats more, right?
Oh, by a lot more.
Oh, I was going to say.
Yeah, in fact, at its height, well, actually, the Coliseum can get 100,000 in it if they open up every single seat, like 102,000. But they've only opened 77,500 seats. It's the right end of the field, which is where the cauldron is and the scoreboard is. They've cut that area off and put bleachers there, and they put tarps over that area there. Because, to be honest with you, Todd, they're too far away from the field anyway. You know, because the track used to be in there. Now, whether they put the track back in there for the Olympics, I heard talk they might do that. But, yeah, they took the track. When Penn State last played there, the track was in. I remember walking on that track and thinking to myself, man, this is where Carl Lewis won 4 gold medals. This is pretty cool. But, yeah. So that is the... And they'll be 12:30 there, but it's 3:30 Eastern time. The games on Saturday. The Vanderbilt game was just beyond words. Look, Alabama survives, beats Georgia. And in the SEC's wisdom, they made sure Alabama played Vanderbilt the next game. No offense, but come on. You and I both know that that is... There's a method behind their madness in the SEC. They're smart. They're smart people. And, I mean, did you and I think twice about that game? No. In fact, there wasn't a game I thought twice about all weekend. I thought it was a rather, quote, benign weekend in college football. And it turned out it was 180 of benign. Pavia played great. Look, I hadn't seen a lot of Pavia. I did see him play for New Mexico State a couple of times. He's on the you know, Penn State played UMass, and UMass had to play New Mexico State last year, and I watched that, and I saw Pavia play that game. I thought, okay, it's fine. But I didn't think twice about how about I didn't think a lot about him because Penn State wasn't playing New Mexico State, right? And I saw New Mexico State, I think, play New Mexico later in the year. But never really thought twice about him in that one. Well, he opened up the opening game of the season against Virginia Tech. And of course, with the delay of the West Virginia game, Jack and I were able to go on a TV and watch some of the Vanderbilt-Virginia Tech game that went into overtime. The Vanderbilt won. Like, wow, that's great. Very impressive. Then... You watched him on Saturday. Every time that Alabama got to within one possession, Vanderbilt scored again and made it a two-possession game. It really reminded me a lot of a game in 84 that Penn State played against Boston College with Doug Flutie. Where, you know, BC came in and they were the ranked team. This is the year Flutie won the Heisman Trophy and the whole thing. And the same thing happened. Every time Flutie and Boston College got it down to 7 points, Penn State made it 14 on the next drive. Essentially, that's what Vanderbilt did the other day. Never trailed. And man, did they play with confidence. And let's be honest, I don't think there was any point where I felt like the Alabama's defense had a handle. There wasn't a single point where I thought Alabama's defense had a handle on Vanderbilt. I watched the last quarter and a half. Couldn't watch, you know, first two and a half. But the last quarter and a half I watched. Wow.
I read a story yesterday that the Vanderbilt coach is Clark Lee.
Clark Lee, yes.
Was watching after they lost last year and happened to stumble upon New Mexico and saw the quarterback and Tim Beck was the offensive coordinator and Jerry Kill and got the quarterback, the tight end, and a couple other New Mexico kids to come to Vanderbilt, plus the coaches. He was so impressed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think Jerry Kill went with him, right?
Yeah, Jerry Kill. Yeah. I don't think he's technically on the staff, right, but he's there.
Right, he's there, and Tim Beck's the offensive coordinator. And Beck, fans would know him from what his time in Nebraska, coaching against Penn State. And look, it's and it was just impressive to see. But then I watched Tennessee, Arkansas. Well, same thing. Here's Arkansas. Okay, starting quarterback Green gets hurt in the fourth quarter. Singleton comes in, right? The running back, pounding. Arkansas's defense played terrific in that game. Terrific. And I agree, Kirk Herbstreit with great analysis. I mean, great analysis. When he said, look, I think what Tennessee did was they let Arkansas, when they got down to the 9-yard line, that they let Arkansas scored because they wanted to give their quarterback a chance to win it. And I agree with that. Because you can see number 9 at the goal line kind of pull up and go, okay, going in. All right? And that was really... And then they held on. And it was a day where Tennessee's quarterback, who's been so good, you could tell like he was a half a beat off. And like, okay... And it paid off for Arkansas. Then Washington and Michigan. Michigan can't throw the ball. Michigan cannot throw the ball. Simple as that. That's why they had to pull Orgy out. They brought in Tuttle. And Tuttle had an interception. He fumbled the ball. And it wasn't on the fumble he made at midfield. It really wasn't his fault because he was trying to protect the ball. It just was punched out, and that's just the way it goes. But Washington made all the key plays, and Will Rogers played well. And I'll be honest, if Will Rogers, if he switches teams, Michigan wins. If Will Rogers switches teams, Michigan wins. Because they've got a quarterback problem. I mean, that's what's so interesting about Michigan. They really do. And then I watched... the Cal-Miami game.
Did you make it to the end?
No. I only watched a few plays, but then I saw the next day the targeting play.
Oh.
That's embarrassing.
So now, apparently the rule is it's only a 12-inch square at the top of the helmet?
6-inch.
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 I didn't know that that was the change.
Yeah, but he hit him with that part.
I'm not arguing that point. I was watching it live.
I mean, so let's start with this. He is now, once he tucks the ball down and he's running, he is no longer a defenseless player. That is accurate. Okay? So let's take that off the board. He is a defenseless player. Here's the issue I have. Number one, and he is not trying to injure him. Not in the least. All right? There's no way in heck I would ever, for a second, say that about the Miami player. Not for a second. But he does launch himself. He leaves his feet. And his helmet goes square into the side of his helmet. Well, it's not intentional, but it's still a penalty. Most penalties are not intentional, you know. It's like, last I checked, almost every penalty I see is not intentional.
And it changed the whole outcome of the game because that was a third down play. Cal would have gotten the ball, or Cal would have kept the drive alive, and Miami got the ball back and drove down for the game winner.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you just sit there and go, what are you watching? That's 2 weeks in a row now where Miami has benefited from a replay review that went in their favor. And I'm not saying anybody is attempting to do anything that's squirrely here. I am not. Not in the least. But let's talk about perception for a moment. Okay? Perception. What's the perception of this the last 2 weeks from the ACC? The perception's not good, right?
No, it looks like they're bailing them out.
I mean, that's just perception. Doesn't mean they are.
No.
But that's the perception of it. And that is, that's a big problem. When the perception is, that's what you're doing, or seems like you're doing, that is a big problem. Big problem. Ugh. All right. We will take a break. Wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Yeah, I've talked about a lot over the years. This goes to Vanderbilt playing with the lead. Okay? It's amazing what playing with the lead does. I know the dramatic come-from-behind moment makes great theater. Makes great theater. But, man, if you can play with the lead, it changes a lot of dynamics for you. And when you're in the the Vanderbilt seat, man, they played with the lead. It meant everything to them that they were able to get that thing done because they played with the lead. And I thought that was so important to them just from the psychological viewpoint, right? They weren't there trying, right? Every time they went up by two scores, that defense went out there and knew that they had the cushion. They couldn't give up the lead. Because now, you know, it was a two-possession game. Neil Kulong tomorrow and Matt doing whatever it is he does.